David, you're not as sick as you were.
I'm not as sick as I was. I am up. I'm doing stuff. I'm probably still contagious, but yeah, COVID got the best of me, and we did not record last week. Funny thing is, when I first started feeling sick, I took a test. I took a COVID test, and it came up negative. And so for like 5 or 6 days, I'm just like, yeah, it's a bad cold. It'll be okay. Bob sends a text saying,
yeah, it's like a day, maybe it's like you 4 days retest. Later, right?
Yeah. He's like, you should probably retest because the new COVID doesn't show up on the test right away. Yeah. And so I took another test right away.
Hour later.
And it was COVID. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're the third person that I know that's happened to. That same situation where they're like, yeah, I tested. I'm good. And then a few days later, it's like, wow, this is really hanging around. So they test again. So,
yeah.
One of my kids' soccer coaches was at practices and at games, just like feeling terrible, headache, and he was like, yeah, I've tested, I'm good, you know, but I just feel, I have this like migraine. And he was just not himself, you could tell. And then before one of the games a couple days ago, he sent a message to everybody. He was like, yep, I'm out. Retested, got it again. So I'm glad you're on the way back from it.
Yeah, welcome back. I needed that Wednesday morning, actually. It was a nice relief because I've been working so hard on the doors. I thought
you needed COVID Wednesday morning.
No. No, so far, so good. And it was, I needed that Wednesday morning. I was just trying to figure out how am I going to get this done. The door video that I just did was such a deep, complicated, heavy, thick project for me to do alone. I did 99% of it alone. I got a little bit of help from Mike works as a fireman, so he's not always available. And Rob is only up here a couple days a week. And so I worked most of that week alone. I think I moved more metal in those 10 days than I have in probably the last 3 years. More weight, physical weight, carrying stuff. Yeah. So when you, and I was just slowly falling behind. I also had a BetterHelp ad in there, so I had to make sure that I was on time as well for my so just jamming. When you guys said we're off today, I was like, oh, I went right out to the shop.
I have this feeling, and I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong. I have this feeling that every time we don't record, Jimmy has this giant sigh of relief, and he like unbuttons his pants and then just like walks out to the shop. He's like,
No, it is. It's like I buy that 3 hours. Every 3 or 4 hours, I can get so much done. And it just came at the right time. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for getting COVID. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, David.
My sacrifices are for you guys.
Yeah. David's like, anytime. Yeah. I'll get it anytime.
It's funny. Somebody said, how do you get sick when you never leave the house? I'm like, well, I went to a baseball game. So the one time I leave the house this year... I get it. So, lesson learned.
Issue. Yeah, that's never right. Don't leave the doors shut.
Never leave the boat.
Never leave the boat.
No, apocalypse now. So, I just wanted to mention. I just wanted to mention before we get too deep into it, and before there's another awkward moment to interrupt. But we lost David Elm City Dave Gagne this week, which was a big shock. Friday night, he got hit by a car coming home from work. He was on his motorcycle. And I posted about it, and several people have posted about it. But Dave was a loyal listener to the show. And he, every time I saw him, he would bring up something that one of us three said. And he was very invested in this maker community, and he was invested in all three of us. And he became a fixture. And I think a couple people said it, and he was just quietly observing, but completely involved. He never really wanted any fame and fortune, and he didn't care about the algorithm. He made stuff on his own quietly, and he got involved in all the events we did here in the Northeast. He was at every go-kart event, he was at every maker camp, and he was at several of the blacksmith events that we did here at the house. And he's going to be sorely missed, and he's gone too soon. He's a year younger than me, and he and I connected. Most recently, we were talking. I saw him he came to the go-kart event here in East Durham. And, of course, we saw each other and hugged that day, and I didn't know it was going to be the last day I'd see him. So, you just got to, if you're on motorcycles, just be careful. I gave up my motorcycles. Even the Vespa I have, I hardly ride it. I wanted to get it together for nostalgic purposes, just for sentimentality. I have it. I probably will never get rid of it. Got it fixed up, changed the seat and everything. But every time I go to ride it, I'm like, I'll just take the car. It's a little safer. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm going to go bring something back to the shop. I mean, there have been several times where I should I drive the Vespa to the other shop? It's 3 miles away. I'm like, yeah, just take the car. Bring a bag of trash with me or something. But you know, nobody had more of a lust for life than Dave. He had so many toys. He had so many collections. And I don't know about the service yet, but it'll all be posted on social media. So if you're in the Northeast and you want to join when the service happens, I've been in touch with his wife, Antar, and she'll let me know when and how to put it out to the world. So let's all sit over and say a prayer for Dave, and please be careful on your motorcycle. That's it.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Vespa thing. I have one as well that I redid years ago. I laid it down twice, and that scared me from it, you know, from riding it. And then I had kids, and I'm like, yeah, it's not worth
and,
the risk.
And the anatomy of Dave's accident was apparently somebody drove in front of him, made a left turn, and that is one of the biggest causes of motorcycle accidents is when somebody who comes out of your opposite lane and doesn't realize you're there. And you know, up here, it's motorcycle town up here. Everywhere it says, watch out for motorcycles. In the spring, they stop posting the signs everywhere. These little things that stick in the grass that say, watch out for motorcycles. But still, sometimes, and you know, whenever anybody's behind me on a motorcycle up here, I just pull over and let them go around me because I don't want them hugging the back of my car. I just let them go around me. But you just got to be careful. It's not necessarily how you drive. It's most of the time how somebody else drives. And that's something you have little, if any, control over in many circumstances. So,
yeah,
just be careful.
That's where I was headed with that. I'm more scared of other people than I am of making mistakes there myself. But
yeah.
Well, like Jimmy said, keep an eye out for info on the service and stuff.
Yeah, I'll post it as well.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about it because you've been talking to us outside of the microphones about that. And I don't want to get all down, but it is a shame to think about as we get older, we run into mortality more often, right? And we end up having people, our parents and our family members and people that are close to us that pass on. And it just starts happening more and more. And it's interesting because I think when if you take the social media and the internet part of our lives away, you're connected to people locally to you. You're connected to your friends and family, the people you run into at the different places you go and stuff. And that's your bubble. And eventually that bubble starts to break apart as those people pass on. And then we're in the fortunate position of knowing people all over the world through what we do. And the community, not just us, but like the community has grown to have these connections across, you know, I mean, we know people all over Europe and I know people in Japan that are like on our Maker Alliance, and our sphere of influence, our connectivity has gotten so much bigger. And that loss is going to be felt bigger.
Ongoing
from now on, you know, and that's, it's a sad thing to think about if you dwell on that part of it. Now, the flip side of that is that we get to know all these people for whatever time we get all over the world, you know, and we get to have connections with people that we wouldn't have had pre-internet, pre-social, pre-YouTube, all of that stuff. There's just no way that we would know Jocko. You know, there's no way that we would know Laura. There's no way that we would know these people that we now get to call friends and get to keep up with. And
would know you guys.
But fair enough. Yeah. But I mean, we're at least in the same country. You know, we could have run across each other, except that David never leaves the house. But other than that, we probably, you know, but, you know, it's sad, but it's also because it's inevitable, but it's inevitable at any scale. And so, like, the flip side of that is that you got to know him. You ran into him through the internet. You ran into what he does and who
Dave
he is.
Dave wandered into my shop. Like, I was thinking about this at least 10 years ago. Dave wandered into my New York City shop, came down the stairs with his wife, and we connected there and then. And I could just tell what a sweet, affectionate, humble, curious, deep artist he was. And, you know, that just always showed. Like I said in my post, we talked about Grandpa Uncle Giggles on here once, and then the next time I saw him, he just quietly handed me a button, which was a button to Grandpa Giggles, Uncle Giggles. And, you know, same thing. When our podcast started, and I'll post this picture this week just so people can see the context. When our podcast started, he really got into it. And then I saw him, and he gave me three buttons, one of each one of us. And I think he gave them to you guys as well.
Yeah.
And they're glued to my bandsaw. And, you know, every time – and that it's like one of the first things I went on my sticker bandsaw was the buttons of us three. And he was just quietly absorbing and being inspired by us and giving it back. You know, it's just – he was a real special guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's sad, but it's really beautiful that Mark Adams photographs, which you two guys need to get. Mark Adams comes to Maker Camp every year for 5 years. This year will be year number 6, and he photographs everybody that just walks across the Seamless. There's no money, there's no nothing. He just wants to photograph everybody in the Maker community. And it's sad but beautiful at the same time that we have all these pictures of everybody. So it's a little scary now that, you know, we lost several people, including Aaron and Jesse, the mechanic girl. Jesse Combs and Dave, and there's a couple others. When you see their picture on Instagram, you start to get nervous. You're like, uh-oh. So it's sad, but it's beautiful that we have these pictures. It's almost like Mark is in service now. I sent Mark's phone number, and I said, this is Mark's number. You can reach out to him. He's got several beautiful pictures of Dave. Yeah. So it's just, he's immortalized now. I mean, the picture that I posted is just such an incredible picture of Dave. And I always thought it was a great picture because it really, it's hard to see somebody's personality in a photograph, but in that one picture of Dave, you could really see. There's one picture where he's smiling, and there's one picture where he's got a straight face, and both of them are exactly who he was. So that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to pivot from that type of conversation, but yeah. I'm going to do it anyway. I'll take Let's the go. Hit. So go. I'm going to talk about what I've been doing this this week. I'm actually a little hesitant to talk about it because it's cool. It's so cool that I kind of don't want to give it away.
Oh,
that's always
you made a hamburger bun this week?
This week I'm a hamburger. No, I'm going to send you guys a picture of this. And
can we post it?
No, don't post it. So remember we were talking about, I won't give all the details right here. I'll just give a little bit of it, and then you can look at the picture, and then in the after show I'll tell you more of the specifics of it. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about tripods a few weeks back, or months back, I don't know, sometime in the last 10 years, we were talking about tripods, and David, you got the fancy, speaking of, has your fancy tripod shown up yet?
It has, yeah. It's okay. It's amazing. Go on.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I didn't buy that fancy tripod. I was frustrated, have been frustrated, shooting by myself with changing the height of tripods. It's just a pain in the butt. All my tripods, I've bought a bunch of them. I've tried different brands and different mechanisms for latches, and it's just always a pain because every leg has at least 2 latches. That's 6 adjustments you have to make to move the thing up and down. And so Cam at Blacktail Studios showed this camera stand thing that he had, and somebody interviewed him, and he was just this little clip of him. Huh?
Jill Dundon interviewed him.
Okay. And so he showed this camera stand. And I was like, huh, I wonder how much that thing is. That looks like what I need. It's $1,800. So I made my own. And it works. And it's awesome.
And it looks exactly like it has the same functions as that camera stand. Until that interview, I had never seen a camera stand like that. And if I would have known, I don't know if I would spend $1,800, but I would have tried to figure out that solution. I don't want to hijack your thing here, but can you see right next to the guitar the stripper pole that's in here? So that it's not really a stripper pole, but it works sort of like your thing, but it wedges itself between the floor and the ceiling. and then I can mount my camera and a light on there and quickly change the height. It's not mobile, but in my office when I need to shoot office shots, that works. That works great. So
that's pretty cool. Well, I'll tell you the details of how I did this in the after show. I want people to watch the video, but it's pretty cool. And the coolest thing about it is that it's standardized materials, so it's a platform that you can just stick stuff to. You can add things to it. I get so excited about modeling and 3D printing now. It's so funny how resistant I used to be to integrating 3D printing. Now I'm like, screw it, man. I need a bracket that goes from this thing to this thing. It takes me 2 seconds to model it. Prints 10 minutes and then it's done, you know. But so it was really cool to just like have a general idea, and then every step I would get to, I'm like, I need a thing right here. Cool. I'll either just go grab some aluminum and drill some holes and make the thing, or I'll model and 3D print the thing. And so I built like locks and bearing mounts and all this, like,
yeah, the I don't think you want to talk about it because you don't want to give it away, but the up and down mechanism looks absolutely amazing.
It works super well.
Yeah, I bet
super
it does.
Well. Yeah. So that's part of what I've been doing. The other thing, like, I'm a little hesitant. You guys know how I am. I'm a little hesitant to talk about changes or personal stuff or, you know, stuff. I just like to keep things close to the chest. But I sold our office building last week. We closed on it a week ago today, I guess. And sold it to a friend of mine, a guy that does property around town. He has a bunch of businesses and stuff. And so it was cool because I knew who it was going to. It was easy. It was an easy process and everything. It's been on the market for about a year. And so we just didn't use it anymore. You know, it's just Forby and I. He works out of his house mostly. And so it was just kind of a great space that was going underutilized. And so I sold it, and I still have access to it for like the rest of the year because he doesn't have any specific plans for it yet. So I still got our big machines in there to move out and handle. But I've been bringing, you can look at my office. I've been bringing all of the stuff that was there, not all the stuff, a lot of the stuff here, and just, you know, I've been like kind of cleaning out my house in the last few months and like organizing and trying to make space. And a lot of that was behind the scenes was for this, to make room to bring in a bunch more stuff that I had to go through. But the cool thing is that having that influx of things to figure out is now actually forcing me to do all the storage stuff in the shop that I've been talking about for so long, about like building a storage area that's like whatever. And so while I've been working on this camera stand, I'll go work on that for half the day, and then I'll go over and start shifting things around and like going through stuff, throwing stuff away. Like I filled up two dumpsters worth of just like, yes, I haven't touched this in several years. I don't need this piece of melamine anymore, and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm getting rid of a lot of stuff. I'm making a lot of space, and I'm filling that space back up with new shelves, new containers, organizing the stuff. And it's like energizing to take part of your workspace and just improve it. You know what I mean? It's instead of piles of stuff, now it's shelves of stuff. There's still stuff, but it's becoming more organized. And all of this all of this process that I've been kind of leading up to about redoing the wood shop and building the clean room and all of this stuff for the last like 6 months or so is finally starting to really like lock together. You know, I've been setting up all these pieces and all of a sudden it's kind of like falling into place. And so it's been really motivating to work on a project that I'm really enjoying and is doing exactly what I want. And then I turn around and I'm like, yeah, and I can also go make progress here, you know, and the shop is becoming finally a little bit more open and usable and organized. And I mean, we got out from underneath the building, which is a great thing as well. But so it's been
how many years did you own that? When did you buy that?
I think in 21. So I think we had it for three years.
That was quick. I thought it was longer than that.
I think it was 21.
And without giving me details, I don't want to ask to be. I don't want to pry. But you sold it for more than you paid for it.
Yes, I did make a profit off of it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that seems to be the only thing with the. It's the only steady thing in this country is real estate, buy and sell. The only steady thing. The only sure thing.
Yeah, we got it at a good time in the economy, but we also got it in a good time in our local economy. So, like, the town that I live in, I've probably told you guys this, but a few years ago, Ford decided to build a giant battery factory, actually two battery factories.
Oh, yeah.
Right south of town in the county. And it was like this, they were like, it's going to be 5,000 jobs, which equals so many thousands of people. I don't remember, you know, it's like the people and then their families and then the people to support those people and their families. And so our town has become the largest growing town in Kentucky in the last 2 years or something. And so we have a Five Guys now. I just want to throw that out there. Like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for me because we didn't have a Five Guys forever.
I'm coming.
But the town is changing a lot. I think in good ways, you know. I mean, there's always bad that comes with growth as well. But I think in general, it's good. But that's made the commercial property and residential property values just go up because people are trying to find places to put new business to support the people that are moving here and stuff. Tons of housing being built and stuff like that. So it's a good kind of boom time for our area. And my buddy that I sold the building to is... I mean, he's like a business guy. So he's investing in property to have the property, even if he doesn't, if he sees the potential in it. So it was just a really good situation all the way around.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's enabled me to, it's kind of forced me to finally clear the building out, get the stuff out of it and deal with, you know, like doing something with it, deciding what to keep and what not to. And, you know, most of the furniture and stuff I like gave to people and donated and that type of thing. I didn't really need to do much with it, but I had to deal with it. So another thing that's interesting, I don't know if I told you guys this or not. So at the building, we have Avid CNC is there. It's a 5x10. It was a 5x5 here. When we moved it there to the building, they gave us stuff to make it bigger. And it is so big. And it's just gigantic. Yeah. And so my butt, and I don't have enough space to bring that back here, even if I wanted to have something like that here. And my buddy, Andy Bird, I think David, I don't know, David, you've probably known him, but Jimmy, you've met Andy before.
Maker Bench.
Yeah, Maker Bench Con. He's a friend of mine that lives here in town. He does CNC stuff on YouTube, and so he has a bunch of lasers and CNCs. He has a 4x4 Avid, and so... He and I are actually, and he just built a giant shop in his backyard. So we're actually going to swap machines. So I'm going to take his 4x4, bring it here, and then somehow we're going to take apart the 5x10 and get it to his new shop. So I'm not looking forward to that.
But, is there a way to do it without taking it apart?
I mean, maybe if you had the right tools and the right access to it, if you had like a crane, maybe. But then you'd have to be able to crane it in and out of something.
You know? Don't forget how the Amish do it.
Lots of people.
Yeah. This, if you can get 15 people, you could pick that machine up. There was one of my events we had. My CNC machine was in a container in my backyard, my CNC plasma cutter. 4x4, it's really like a footprint of like 7x7 feet, and it weighs thousands of pounds. But we had 10 people here, and I was like, let's all just give it a try. 10 people got on it. We just picked it up like it was light as a feather, and we just carried it about 100 feet from the container and put it in the shop, and that's where it's been sitting ever since. So if you can get together, like if you call like a fan day and get everybody to put it on a truck, call in like a hangout.
I don't know if I assume it would fit out the door as one piece on the short axis, but I don't know. I haven't actually measured that yet. Mm. But where we... Josh did all the work of like rebuilding it when we got it in there. So I can't say we like I did it, but when he put it back together, there's a break that's not quite in the halfway mark, but it's pretty close to the halfway mark where you can kind of, the pieces are attached together. So you could theoretically undo it there and you've got 2 5x5-ish tables to move. The gantry is the heavy thing on those things. It's like ridiculous. It's a giant extrusion. Like, I don't know. It's 12 inches tall by 8 inches deep or some craziness. Mm-hmm. And then the spindle itself weighs 30 pounds, 40 pounds. So just taking that off, you know, helps make it more movable. But it's interesting because we have to move that one to his shop. I'm also going to take my plasma table from Avid that's at the house out to the farm because I think I'm going to use it more out there. And then, and it's a 2x4. So I have to move that out there and then move his 4x4 into its spot in the house. So there's still a lot of big, heavy shifting, you know, to do. But anyway, so that's kind of what I've been doing. I've been moving things around, making camera stuff, dealing with much overflow of, mm-hmm. you know, packing stuff and material stuff. And I have about 8,000 USB cables and HDMI cables. If anybody wants them, I have stuff like that. So, yeah. David, what have you been doing other than being sick?
Yeah. So before I got sick, I was working on, this is my grandma's calculator. Sorry for anybody who's listening. But this is the coolest looking calculator you will ever see. So it's from the 70s. And I always remember it on my grandfather's desk. This is not Grandpa Pachuto. This is the other set of grandparents. And it was just, and it had like a little plastic cover that went over top of it when not being used, yeah. Right?
Don't want to get dusty.
Because that's what grandparents did. And a year ago, it stopped working. And Grandma needed a new calculator. And grandmas are grandmas. So instead of getting Grandma a new calculator, I found the exact same calculator on eBay and then gave that to her. And then realized her broken one just needed to be resoldered at the power joint. So it was... power joint. That's obviously, I know what I'm talking about. So it was a quick, easy fix. And I've been wanting to encase this guy in wood for a long time. And so I started taking it apart and building it up in layers. So you got a bottom layer with a pocket and vents on there. I started to do this without a CNC. And I was like, this is taking way too long. It's so freaking messy using a router and router templates and stuff. And then this other layer has these pieces that pop right into like a little inlay. And there's enough volume of wood. So when it's all together, I can do some final shaping when it's all done and make it look cool. And I'm building the whole stand for this. So it's going to be an art piece. So it's like, it's going to have a floor stand. So it's up to like desk level.
And you're taking the plastic housing off completely.
No plastic. I 3D printed all the buttons. Bamboo Lab sent me their X1 carbon printer. And I purchased the A1 printer, which is it's like the baby version of that. Same print volume, but doesn't have the enclosure. And I thought I would never need a 3D printer that does multicolor. Until you have one. And it works so freaking well.
Yeah. That is a fantastic printer.
I'm 3D printing all the buttons and the numbers that go on top of it. And then I got sick. And I didn't work for a week and I have sponsored deadlines and I didn't want to rush this project because I really want it to look super freaking cool when it's done. So I set it aside and I had to come up with another project I could quickly shoot in a day, which is actually turned into 2 days. But I've had this idea of, and this has been in my idea list for a long time, of like a little to do pad. Like I use blank playing cards as my little writable to-do list, and I've been using these for a while. They're great. And I thought it would be cool if I had a little stand for this and then a stamp. I could make the lines on here with like little check boxes.
That's cool.
So I'll quickly show this off here. This little desk stand has a place for all the cards to go into. And then I made a stamp that sits right there so you can stamp your card. And then it's got a place for pens and stuff. And in typical... the reason I haven't done this project is because it seems too simple. It's like it's weird, as we do this for many years, small little crafty projects don't feel like a good video, but in actuality it is. There's always a subject in there, right? And so I'm making the thing, and I didn't look online for other inspiration. And after I got most of it made, I'm like, I want to see what other people are doing. And then I was I was like, man, there's such a more so much more simple and elegant way that I totally missed. And it is this one. This is cut on the CNC, so it's not completely done yet. So this outside of the box here is going to get cut off and then flush trimmed. But so this one, the cards sit in this little pocket, and there's a slight little a little pocket for the card, right? This guy on Etsy makes these 3D printed stencils, so no stamp necessary to stamp the cards. You just put the card behind it, and then you can quickly take a pen or pencil and stencil out your lines with the little check boxes. So I 3D printed this stencil, and you know, if you don't have a 3D printer, I can say just go to this guy on Etsy. I don't know if it's his original idea, but it's freaking brilliant.
The laser cut those simply well too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so the stencil will fit into the pocket over top of the cards, and then you can draw your little thing. Yeah, it's
that's cool.
And it's so funny when you work on something and you see. You come across the more simple design, and you're like, "Man, that's
I wish
simplicity
I'd thought
of that. So yeah, simplicity is so hard."
Yeah,
and so the whole reason I did this is because I needed to do something quickly, and so I wanted to talk about doing something last second and being forced to be creative when there is a tight deadline. And it's funny how you put a project in the notebook to do at some time, and you're like, oh, the idea will hit me at some point, and I'll figure out the solution and we'll do that. But when you just say, you know what, I'm going to do that, and I have until tomorrow to figure it out, it's funny how creative you can be in that short amount of time.
I mean, that's how I think we all produce some of our best work. And the example that comes to mind is, years ago, I made this treasure chest, which has been one of my viral videos. I made a treasure chest that was a Make Magazine video, when I posted videos on Make Magazine, someone would go viral, and then occasionally I would post them on my channel, and they wouldn't obviously go as viral as they did the first time. Makes sense. But that was one of the videos where it was taken off. This is 2014, 2015 when I made that. I had to submit a video twice a month for them, and there was always a deadline. And I was with Dave Welder, and I was like, I got to make something. I was like, you know what? I always wanted to make a treasure chest, but I always wanted to make it big and elaborate. Maybe I could scale the project back and make it a little bit smaller. And I just started cutting. And the part of the reason, somebody showed me a picture of them and the cat watching the big screen, and it was me making that thing. I was like, whoa, that's an oldie. And that was the video that set that example for me. It was a one-day build. I had to submit it the next day. I was like, I got to make something simple and impactful. And I made that. It just like you said, it's an idea you have, but the minute you're confronted with, okay, I got to make it in the next 10 hours, you suddenly, all the pieces fall into place. And that was one of those. And to put it into current issues, I had to make the doors for the barn. And I had the BetterHelp ad, and they wanted to see. I promised them a month ago that I would put it out on the Saturday. This past Saturday, and I was getting down to the wire. That's why I needed those few hours that we were able to steal from not posting last week. I had to do all that work mostly alone, but I also had to edit it. So I emailed my agent Friday morning, and I said, I'm going to have this video done later today for submission. And I was hoping to get it in within work hours so that somebody there could watch it and I'd be approved to put it out on the Saturday, I promised. And I worked outside all the small details, which are going to just take me an hour to do all day long. I finished them at like 6 o'clock and then I edited until like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then I finally finished my video with so many pieces missing. No door pulls, no latches on the big door. There was so many things. I'm like, these details aren't going to make the video any better. All the hard work is the big picture. And even the second door, I didn't finish. And I submitted it to him and I didn't hear anything until Monday afternoon. And they're like, just add this bit to the description and you're approved. And that's why that video came out after the weekend. But I was like, I thought they were going to be upset with me. I tried my best to get it in before work hours on Friday afternoon. I just couldn't do it. And like, I kept checking back to see if Mark was going to be like, where's the video? You know, nobody put my feet to the fire. So I was like, all right, no one's paying attention as much as I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you get, when you get in those time crunches, you have to make decisions. You can't waffle. Okay, this is the direction we're going, and that's it.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, when you were saying that, David, about the kind of putting something on the list and then you don't actually figure it out. I immediately thought about my master closet, their closet in our bedroom, is this thing that's been on the list for a long time because it's like, yes, we need to redo it. It's the same closet that my grandparents had. Literally, it's their closet. And so it is set up for how they needed a walk-in closet, you know. And so it's been on my list to do, but that is a really zoomed out idea of I need to do the closet. To actually do the closet, I have to zoom in to specific each side. What do I need over here? How many shoes do I have? How much hanging space versus, you know, this and that? And how do we store all of the suitcases in the top? All that, you have to zoom into all those details. And so for me, it is so easy to stick at the zoomed out level on an idea like that and never force myself to zoom into it because there's no, like, all my stuff fits in there. Like, there's no urgency. There's no, like, I have to pivot. I have to do the closet this weekend, you know. And so I don't run into a whole lot of urgency within the projects that I do, partially because I've decided that I don't really enjoy that urgency and I don't do that on purpose. But there are things like the closet that always are at the same distance from where I am today. They are never getting closer to being done because I'm holding them out there because I don't want to zoom in on the details and I don't want to figure out a simpler way to do something I know I need to one of these days, but I can always find something else to put in the way of it. So I've got to figure out how to maybe generate some of the urgency that you're talking about on purpose for things like that, you know, so that I can actually move them ahead. I think the Carmagia is kind of the same way. It's really easy to be like, well, I have another several years worth of work, so putting it off for another week, it's not really a big deal. Like, I won't feel it very much, but, you know, similar situation.
When you have all the time, you might even have a direction. But you're constantly, at least for me, you're constantly thinking, there might be a better way. So I can keep holding off. And then those branches, even though I'm going to go down this way. And then there's still like, is there a better way? You know, you're thinking of creative solutions and it's just when you are forced to pick something, there's no more choices. It's just doing. And so many of the, even when I worked at the ad agency, when there was like these on fire deadlines, we did some of our best work. It's not a healthy way to work, but we did some of our best work when there's no time.
Yeah. So Jenny and I have this, we deal with that between the two of us a lot. If we're trying to work on something, like when we did the kitchen, it was my impulse is I've got an idea. Let's just do the thing. Here's the idea. Let's make that. And her impulse is what you said. Yeah, but there's probably another way to do it. There's probably another. And so Whereas I will jump in and do something just to move ahead. Sometimes she wants to see every possible solution for it to make sure that she's picking the right one. And then, you know, she'll eventually settle on one. And so that's a struggle that we have between how we move projects forward. But the thing that I have to remind her of is that, and I think we can forget about this ourselves. I have to tell myself this too, is that we make things for a living and we have to constantly make things. So if you make something and it's not the right solution, that means you have more work that you get to do. You have the opportunity to make a thing again or a second time or a better or a, and so I always tell her, like, if we're building something for the house, I'm like, I want to build it and get it in place. And then a week later, if you tell me that it's not the right thing and we need to build it again or we need to swap the idea, cool. No big deal. But that paralysis of I don't want to do anything because I don't know the best thing to do is Jimmy's light just turned off. that is something that I don't think is really useful. I don't want to say healthy. That's the wrong word for it. But I don't think that's useful, you know, after a certain point, like looking for ideas, eventually just getting something started and then pivoting if you need to, I think is more beneficial. Some sort of forward motion.
When I got started in woodworking, of course, the most important tool is a bench, a place to work. And I remember, you know, this is like 12 years ago, getting a woodworking bench book, watching videos and trying to figure out, like, what are all these features that I need? And then I ended up building a bench without the features because I just needed a bench. And then having that first workbench for a couple of years helped me realize what I actually need. So then the second time when I went to go build a bench, actually when we moved into this house, I built the features that I needed. And it was, now it's a great bench. I've evolved and I wish a couple things were different, but it's still great. My desk here in my office, when I built this 2 or 3 years ago, it was perfect for me. But now that I've been using it for all this time, I'm like, it is not perfect. Things don't fit. There's a weird flow and it looks messy no matter what I do. My next desk is going to be so much better and it's going to have all the things that I need right now. But I'm glad I built this first one so I could use it and get past the trying to make the perfect thing and just get a thing and then figure out what I need.
To pivot for just a second, don't you think that's amazing that Jimmy's light turns off on cue? Don't you think it's amazing? I'm grateful that we have people like us have the mindset of...
He's okay. He's okay, folks.
He's fine. People who can't see it, he did not fall over. He just dropped something. Like that you... Okay, you just said, I built a desk and it was perfect for me. And now it's not perfect... And I know what is. And so the next time I build a desk, like that sentence right there is awesome. I built a thing for myself. And then I use that thing to the point to where I know what I need and I can build another one to be better. That's awesome.
It's awesome.
I want everybody to have that thing to where they go, I can make the thing I need and then I can make it again and do it better. Gets me excited.
Except for my silly brain goes in a different direction. Like, why can't you just like the things that you have?
Well, yeah, sure. You can be content, but you can always like look for improvement, you know.
But it's the best thing about being a maker is we get to surround ourselves with what we want, the perfect working environment.
And we get to iterate. It's like, you know, it's almost encouraged, at least for me. I encourage myself to iterate through things. What did you say?
I'm okay now. I try to charge my light and it got connected and pulled my microphone off its stand. And I'm okay.
It sounded like the electricity pole outside the house fell over and everything just went to crap.
The cord that is on my light, which I can't put in the right spot because I didn't realize it's too short. So I went to put it in the right spot, and it lifted my microphone out of its stand and fell over because the cord was wrapped around it. That's it. Sure.
But other than that, I'm okay.
Yeah. Now, I do it all the time. I always say I can make it again later. So that's the most important. If you get stuck in a deadline, just jam through it. This way you have a great point of reference versus dilly-dallying and making notes and thinking and looking for inspiration. If you just jump into a project and you make it, this is good enough. Just like I did with the doors. I got them to a point where they look good on camera, but then afterwards, even Derek, if you guys watch the video, you and the audience, you'll see I overlap all the joints for the big thick doors, and then for the thick doors, but then for the big giant doors, I just stick the planks in side by side. And that was because I was running out of time, but also because I didn't want to have to rabbit them. They're 11 feet, 12 feet long. I don't want to have to rabbit them on the table, so I don't have a long enough outfeed table. I'd be chasing them, and the rabbits would get sloppy because the wood planks aren't perfectly flat. And I was like, you know what? I'll just jam them in together, and I'll do what I did on my big doors when I built them with JD a few years ago. I just put a sheet of black plastic between them, so anything you can't see through it. And then I put another layer of wood on the other side. And the smaller doors, which I use 2-inch thick material, every piece was shorter, more stout, much easier to run through the table saw to put a rabbet on each one, so they overlap, so you don't see air, and if they were shrinking, you won't see. But Derek's like, did you do that for practicality, or did you just run out of time? I was like, I was just both of them. As I was running out of time, I just had, that was the day when I thought I was going to be finished by 2 o'clock and finish my edit by 5 o'clock and submit it. Yeah. So sometimes you just got to make an executive decision, and then later on you can step back and improve it. So what I did was I took some time yesterday, actually Monday, and with those doors, I took a crowbar and I was able to stack them. It's planks side by side, which make up the facade of the door. And I was able to put a crowbar in the frame of the door and crank it really tight and then close all the air gaps. Because this is all rough sawn lumber, so it's not perfectly flat. So I was able to get a screw ready, a cross plank, get the crowbar ready, and with like my foot or my elbow, push the crowbar really tight, close all the air gaps, and put all the screws into the cross plank. So I was able to figure that out while I was working alone. And then I'll insulate or put another layer of wood in the opposite direction.
Another thing kind of in regard to like you changing, you changed what you did maybe from what you would have done because of the timeline. David, you had one idea and then you found a simpler one and you shifted gears there or did both or whatever. One of the things that I struggle with is this, like, and I'm getting better about it, I'm aware of it, is considerations and justification of my choices when it comes to making things. Now, if I was completely in a bubble, completely nobody ever saw the things that I did, I don't think this would be an issue. But because I make things and I put it on the internet, the feedback you get is always, well, why didn't you blank? Legit good ideas. Like, I'm not, feedback's great. But I got into the habit for a long time of trying to preemptively justify things, my choices, because there are so many.
I always tell you, just do what you want.
Yeah. There are so many potential, like, you know, well, you could do it this way, you could do it this way. And it's great to consider as many things as you want, you know, to find the best thing that's a good fit for you. But I was trying to, I often try to consider so much to avoid having to justify my choices to other people. And really the answer there is just don't justify your choices to people. You know, it's like, I don't need to overconsider. I just need to make the, like, so with this camera stand, I have already had the conversation with myself. Yeah, but they're going to say this, and they're going to ask why you didn't do this, and they're going to talk about the fact that...
Just let them ask, just don't answer. Just give them a heart.
I know. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's don't... engage. I'm not doing anything. But I think the thing there is just is letting outside influence become another thing for you to consider when you're, when you're trying to think of all those different things, which one is the best option. If you're then adding in other people's opinions on those options, it can be really debilitating and really just make nothing happen. And so this is more for me than anybody else, but I need to just really put up that separation between these are my choices and I can do it different another time, but this is where I landed on this thing and this is what it does and this is how it turned out. And like, the end, I don't have to justify those things to anybody except my wife. And I often have to justify why I built something a certain way to her. But that's valid because she's, you know, she's enjoying it too and using it too.
A lot of times I'll make decisions based on what it's going to look like filmatically or cinematically. For instance, I did the door project and there was several times where I filmed all four of the horse stall doors on the one side of the building, which was the most cinematic shot. And I would try to do a process to each door, bum, 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 bum. And that's just the most recent example. But a lot of times I'll look back and say, what is this going to look like if I do all these processes consecutively at the same time on a speeded up clip versus where I would just do one, look at it, decide, and okay, let me do the other one, look at it, decide, fix, learn what I learned from that one, do a better job here. So with the doors, for instance, I cut them all at the same time just so that would look better on camera. And I had to cut the doors in half. I made these Dutch doors that was split in half. So I do a lot of those decisions based on what it's going to look like cinematically versus practicality. And whether people care or not, I mean, some of those decisions are strictly for what it's going to look like from the camera's eye view. But that's why we make movies. So
this is a totally different topic, but one of the problems that I have of delaying the calculator build is the longer it takes me to make a project, the more weight and importance this project has and the more pressure it has. So this art piece, if it's going to end up taking me 6 weeks, and if I mentally build this thing up in my head of like, well, I worked on that thing for over a month and now it's got to be even more perfect and I got to worry about the details even more. So the longer a project takes, the more weight, mental weight it takes up in my brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both of them. Yep. Yeah, another, I'm kind of the same way. Yeah,
another important thing is that, and I do this, and maybe you said that while I was fumbling with the microphone, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but making a promise to yourself and a client is really important too, so you know that you do something. And I got this BetterHelp opportunity to do an ad for BetterHelp, and they said, what would your video be? They asked my agent, what would the video be if he did a BetterHelp ad? And I went through my list of projects and I said, I've been needing to make the doors for the barn. And that is one sort of crown jewel for the barn that's really important. It's something I've been avoiding all summer long. I've been wanting to start it since May. And if I dedicate myself to this good paying ad, give them a quality video, and I'll get something done. I'll dedicate myself to this. And that's why I skipped a week. I didn't do a video. I started this video a week before, skipped the weekend, and then I got it done for the following weekend. And I knew also that it was going to be a lot of heavy lifting. And I just like when you go to the gym and you go, I just have to go and do it. Whatever that physical exercise is, I just have to go and do it. So for the nearly 2 weeks I spent doing those doors, I didn't go on the bike at all. Because the physical activity of me doing it, I was like, you know what? Let me just replace the bike with the physical activity of dragging steel and wood all around. And I just worked my butt off and I did it. And if I didn't make that promise to the BetterHelp people, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it. And it got right down to the wire to the moment where I missed the deadline that I thought was so important. But no one seemed to care. And the video is performing pretty well, you know, for my current status.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, any other thoughts on, pivoting?
I think if you're listening, I think it's a good exercise to say, okay, I have a Saturday or I have a window of opportunity. It's 9 a.m. I have dinner tonight at 7. What can I get done between now and my dinner date with my wife or my girlfriend? It's good to set those challenges. And that's how I make a lot of my most favorite content.
That's a really, really good point. If I tell myself I'm going to do this thing on this particular day and I have this window and I'm not going to allow distractions and I get that thing done. That's a really good way of making an artificial deadline and sticking to it.
Yeah. I look at the clock and I say by 6 o'clock when I have to start getting prepped to go to my girlfriend's house, I'm going to have this. So this bullet list done. And then a good thing is too, is sometimes I take my watch off, because now I mostly wear the Apple Watch. I take my watch off, and if I take my watch off, I have absolutely no idea where my phone is. And I'll just go from podcast to autoplay, and I will have no idea where my phone is. And then I have to remember where I hung my watch up. So if it's a day of welding, I have to remember where I hung my watch up so that I could set the alarm so I could hear where my phone is. And my phone will be like on a window ledge, like above my head, because I put it there when I was on a ladder. And it'll be 3 hours later. I'll put my phone down and misplace it 8 minutes after I put it down and have no idea where it is in the shop. And if I don't have my wristwatch on, I have no idea where my watch is or where my phone is. And I go, I have to keep working. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's just a distraction. And I'll get phone calls in my earphones, and I'll be like, I don't know who that is because I didn't see my watch or my phone. I don't know what it is. I'm just going to ignore it. And that's what sometimes you have to do.
Yeah. Cool. The sole purpose of my watch is just so I could find my phone.
100%. And that's what I say at the welding, in my welding, general welding area, I usually just stick it on, hang it on something, hook it on a hook, my watch, so I don't destroy it any more than I already have. And then I lose both of them. I have no contact with the outside world. Last night, actually, I went out to dinner with Rachel and I put my Rolex on because it was sitting there on my desk. I'm like, oh, let me put my Rolex on. But I need my Apple Watch. I brought my Apple Watch and hung it on the drive shaft of the car, hung it on the shifter of the car, so at least it would be nearby. That was in case I lost my phone in the vicinity. Like this.
I got a new Apple Watch recently because I lost mine in the ocean, which was really fun. But I bought one of these screen protector for it because of welding and like grinding and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just a few dollars, and you can, you know. I was never really interested in getting a screen protector for a watch. It didn't seem like it made sense. But after ruining or losing one watch, I was like, yeah, I may as well just like do my best.
Mine wasn't so bad. Actually, it's a little chipped up. You see that biggest burn that I got the other day? There's a pretty bad burn on it. If you guys ever get welding splatter or grinding splatter, either on your watch or your phone, take a razor blade to it and scrape it like you're scraping paint off, and all those little prickles that feel like they're never going to go away will go away. And in many cases, so will the mark it leaves. But, you know, if it's deep, it's going to stay. So if you're welding and you get a couple of, like, really far away weld splats stuck to your phone or the surface of your watch, take a razor blade and you'll feel them scrape off just like paint. And then...
Wow.
I used to do that to my Rolex. It would stick on there, and then I'd just take a razor blade and scrape it off, and it would feel brand new again.
Huh.
Unless it's really deep burn, like a big pebble sticks there for a couple seconds, and you'll get a little bit of a scar. But most often, all the little micro ones that you could feel but can't see, they'll go away.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. Oh, actually, I got an email from Patreon. This is not a thing that's immediate, but that's really distracting. Mm-hmm. So Patreon sent out an email saying that iOS, Apple is forcing them to switch the way that they do charges on through their app and on iPhones and whatever. It's not their fault. It's not our fault, but basically in the next year, if we want to continue to get support on iPhones through the app, we have to switch from per item Patreon support, which is what we do now per episode, to a subscription. So basically just like a monthly pay rather than an individual episode pay. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know how that'll change like amounts and this and that. I'm just throwing it out there now because I know it's going to happen in like a year. At the latest, we are going to have to make that switch. So I'll talk to our patron people about that later, but just want to throw that out there that it is not us. It's not even Patreon. It's Apple. So there will be a change coming there. But speaking of Patreon, we are very grateful for all the support over at Patreon. People who pay any amount to support the show. It's super cool. Big thanks to everybody over there. People like... Hey, Rob Rojas is on this list. Hey, thanks, Rob.
Hi, Rob.
But also let's see. Let's find Brandon Gilbert. Brandon Gilbert has been supporting the show for a very long time, since almost 2 years now. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people support the show through Patreon. That's the only way that we have to make money from the show, to pay for the editing and for the hosting and to pay us and stuff. And so very, very grateful for any amount of support over there. But these people go above and beyond, and they have for a long time. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Lowen Design, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative. They go above and beyond, and they really help us out, and we're very grateful for that. And they all get, they being everyone, get the after show, which is a separate show from this, where I'm going to tell you more about the camera stand, and I'm sure the guys, the other two guys, will have secret new stuff to talk about in the after show. So yeah, if you want to join up on Patreon, you want to get the after show, you want to help us out, go to patreon.com/makingit. We would be very grateful. We are grateful for all the support. So thank you all for that. I have a pick. I'll go ahead, since I'm already talking. I'll go ahead. Sure. I don't have a video pick because I don't watch videos that often these days. But I found a band by accident, which is really interesting. And they're not a band that I would typically like, but they caught me off guard. They're called The Reign of Kendo. You ever heard of The Reign of Kendo?
No.
So reign like a king reigns, R-E-I-G-N. They've been around for a long time. I don't know that they've put out any music in a while. I don't know. I just kind of came across them. It's like alternative pop rock stuff. It's like, you know, it's not rock, it's like rock, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, not rock,
but it has this rock. Yeah, it's not rock, it's rock.
It's like, yeah,
it has
rock.
this jazz, like, you can tell that the people played jazz, and I don't even like jazz. That's why I think it's maybe kind of a weird pick for me, is because I'm not really, I've just never enjoyed listening to jazz. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it, I don't enjoy listening to it. But the drummer and the piano player and the bass player in this band, you can tell that they came from jazz, because there is movement and there are these weird key changes, and it's just there's a tightness. You know how, like, in jazz, like the rhythm section in a jazz band has to be so tight for it to work. Mm-hmm. They have to stick together, they have to be in tune, and the drummer, the bass player, and the piano player are that in this band. From what I've heard, I haven't listened to all their stuff yet, but it's wild, man. I was listening to it going, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I grabbed my kids, because my daughter writes music and plays piano and plays guitar. My son plays, all of my kids play piano, but one of my boys is real into like classical music and very difficult, interesting stuff. And so I grab both of them, I'm like, listen to different parts of this, and listen to this, and how these things sync up, and the changes that they're doing here. And it was a really cool moment to be like, I ran across a band. Hey, kids, let's talk about the music theory of this and how locked together it is. And it was fun. So, may not be your thing, but it is worth a listen, just from a appreciation standpoint, I think. The Reign of Kendo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jimmy,
what I've been watching, you guys are going to laugh at me. I've been watching a lot of election news, because I'm curious about all that. But more importantly,
you said I was going to laugh at you.
So. More importantly, I've been watching a lot of reels on how to tie certain knots. So much so that what I've been doing is I've been doing screen recordings of the knots that I'm watching. They're only 30 seconds long. And I'm doing screen recordings, and I'm creating a library on my phone, so that when I have that moment where I have nothing to do, I could practice my knots from these really explicit, simple YouTube reels, YouTube shorts. So that's really what I've been doing. And a lot of the videos look similar, so I don't even know what channel they're from. I just see them, and I hit screen record, record them for like two passes, and then put them in one of my albums. I have about 25, 30 different knots in my video album that I've been saving on my phone. So I'm going to become a knot master. There's two knots that I already learned from that I use all the time.
I've watched those videos before, and every time I'm like, oh man, that's one of those things I really should learn how to do, and I don't.
At Maker Camp, I think we did it last year. I think we're going to do it again. There was a booth at Maker Camp where people just come with ropes and share knots and just sit around and talk about knots. If for no other reason, come to Maker Camp to learn how to tie knots.
Cool. So do you have a specific channel to recommend?
No.
Or just go type look up knot videos?
Look up knot videos in the reels. Is it reels or shorts? I forget what she's watching. YouTube is shorts, right?
I can't wait to see the description for this podcast to see what you put in there, Bob.
Jimmy said learn how to tie knots on YouTube. That's what I say. I hold on. Let me just open the library and see.
I thought you were getting a phone call.
Talk amongst yourselves. The bear essentials is one that I recorded last night. The bear essentials is a knot channel. Let me just go to my albums this way I can see my albums.
All right. While you're looking for that, David, what do you have to recommend?
So I've had to have mentioned this guy sometime in the past. He's called the 8-Bit Guy. Are you familiar with the 8-Bit Guy at all?
Sounds familiar.
He's a big channel. It's like 1.44 million subscribers. Jimmy's showing us at @not_master.
Yeah.
So not he's, master.
He's the predominant one.
He does a lot of like retro computer videos. Like he's got a whole series on Commodore 64s, and I grew up with an Atari computer, so it's cool to see all these old vintage electronics that I played with as a kid on this channel. And the reason I'm recommending him now is I'm using one of his retro writing videos to restore an old Mac. Retro writing is taking plastic that is aged and making it look new again, because plastic will yellow over time, and there's a few different ways to make it look brand new. So the 8-Bit Guy.
Okay, cool. Just so you know, the Knot Master on YouTube has 3.5 million subscribers.
Oh.
So there's a lot of people that know about the Knot Master. Yeah, I will check out the 8-Bit Guy. That sounds cool. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
Is it bedtime yet?
No? I have to go and make... we're not getting off. We're going to stay on the after show, but I have to go and make the second door. It's one. I prepped all the metal yesterday, and I'm going to make the second double doors for the barn today. That's one of my things.
Mm.
Fun times.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, I guess that's it then. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you.
We will catch you next time.
Bye.